right, and here we are. This is the Working Title Show with Zach Sams, and we are back. All right. We are here. We are back. This is the Working Title Show with Zach Sams, and we're continuing with this summer hiatus of bad scheduling, rescheduling, unscheduling, and everything in between. But what is today? The 21st? It's the day after my son's 16th birthday. He turned 16.
Back to school.
Yesterday. What's that?
People are back to school.
Which really kind of gets everything, at least in my world, restarted.
Traffic
again.
All the real estate people are back from Aspen, so we can go do deals now.
Yes.
Yeah. When did you get back from Aspen?
Just a minute ago. I just flew in. We had all these symposiums and all kinds of private equity meetings, and you know, you wouldn't understand.
I wasn't invited, but we're glad you're back.
You look good.
You got some good sun in Aspen.
Pebble Beach.
Pebble Beach was awesome.
Yeah.
It was great. We missed you.
Well, next year.
We were, Tyler, I play in Pat Green's charity tournament. I played in it 3 times, and I would have never played in it if it wasn't for my good buddy Tyler here inviting me a few years ago. And then, you know, his daughter decided to go to college, and he had to go move her in.
Yep.
And didn't have to go.
Happens.
We made the best of it that we could.
I'm sure you did.
And saw your folks. And
you had to do it without me.
It was great.
Yeah.
Pat raised some great money for some great charities, we did all that while having a good time on the Monterey Peninsula.
Nice. Tough. It's always nice.
Yeah, tough life. Yeah, we were blessed, so that was really good. So, but here we are. We're back in the swing of things. We're scheduled to record again next week, so hopefully we'll get a good run going here now that we're past the summer.
We're back to school. Everybody's back to work.
Back to school. We have a great guest today, Mark Nunley with the Ashford Company.
Ashford Group of Companies. How about that?
The Ashford Group of Companies. And me and Mark happened to be sitting, I guess, next to each other at the MCBA meeting a week ago, and he was telling me he worked for Ashford. We do a lot of the title work for Ashford. Okay. And so we were chatting, and he told me he'd kind of quasi-retired, but his boss wouldn't let him. And now you're doing some civic work. I was like, what are you doing? What's civic work? And he said, well, I'm working on the downtown homeless issue, unsheltered issue, whatever term we're using these days. I was like, well, we've been talking a lot about that. And, you know, it's interesting because I've never lived in downtown. I was born in Dallas, but I grew up in Argyle. But even a guy like me that lives, 50 minutes north of the city, it's important to me that downtown's a cool place.
Yeah.
And that, when people visit here, that it looks good. And so I love to hear that, obviously really accomplished and smart people are working on this. But Mark, before we get into that, just tell us how you... obviously you're from Texas, and how you got to Dallas, how you got, what you did for Ashford, because y'all have that's a cool company.
Yeah, absolutely.
And a neat story.
I'm a native Texan and grew up on a big cattle ranch, about 90 miles northwest of here, up in Monte County, loved it. And my brother's still a cattle rancher, and my mother still lives on the ranch. And
so when you grew up cattle, so were you doing ranch and stuff? Cows in the morning?
I baled hay and all the Texan stuff. But, my brother stayed cattle ranching, and I decided to go to school on the West Coast and went to Pepperdine in Malibu for 4 years. So I just elected not to stay on the ranch.
Now, does your brother haze you about being a city slicker?
Oh,
now?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Actually, even today, I go back home. So my brother, who wears the boots and the hat, and he's
full cowboy,
full board cowboy, and he doesn't even begin to understand why you would choose to live in Dallas versus live on the ranch. He just can't even. So he'll come to Dallas maybe once or twice a year and just,
get back as soon as he can.
Can't wait to get back.
Get back.
Well, the funny thing is, we met for coffee earlier and I saw your last name and had never met you before.
Yeah.
But I was like, surely it's not the same Nunley that has the ranch up north of here that I've stayed on 20 plus times. We've got some mutual friends that when I was in high school, we would camp out on the Nunley Ranch a lot, every weekend. And as high school kids would do, we sometimes made poor choices.
You didn't right. have any, you didn't and, have any kegs of beer out there.
That's neither here nor there. But but we did have his Uncle Earl.
You got an encounter with my uncle, I heard.
Your Uncle Earl had a John boat that was on this pond that mm-hmm. we would camp next to. Mm-hmm. And we had some amazing adventures out there. Like one year it froze over completely.
Yeah.
And we were playing out on the ice and like really stupid, but like so much fun. But we also had guns mm-hmm. and as kids from Wichita Falls would do, we were all well armed. And he had this old John boat that was a piece of shit. And it was up against the bank and we assumed it was a sunken boat that we used for target practice with our 30-06. And we blew 30 plus holes in holes the size of a baseball.
It's gone.
In the side of this boat. And the boat slowly started sinking into the pond. And
I'm surprised I never heard this story.
My friend Scott, thank God I wasn't the primary, because I was just a friend of the primary. And Mr. Nunley called them and gave them a massive piece of his, I can't remember how they remedied the situation, but
new
we
boat.
Did, we did for sure. New John we boat. Did.
Let me tell you, you're probably lucky because our ranch and my uncle's ranch kind of bordered each other. So you had my uncle Earl, which you know, and my father. You're lucky probably this happened on my uncle's ranch.
And
my dad, was kind of a more of a hard guy.
He might have shot us.
So
he might have murdered us in our tents at night.
Could have happened, sir.
That's a beautiful piece of property.
Yeah, it's nice.
Yeah, that's God's country out there.
So anyway, I grew up. That's where I grew up. Went to school on the West Coast. After college, I moved to Houston, and I'm an accounting guy. I'm a CPA, and went to work for Arthur Anderson in Houston for a few years, and then after a few years of that, I went to work for a real estate developer in Houston. His name was Archie Bennett, a big hotel guy. So I did partnership tax returns for this guy, right? And for a couple of years, I went back to public accounting for a few years, but then I came back to work for the Bennett. So I've worked for the Bennett's for over 40 years. And he moved the company to Dallas in 1987 or 88.
From Houston?
From Houston.
Okay.
And I've been CFO, CAO for the Ashford Group of Companies for a long time, and loved it. And worked for, Archie has long since retired, but Monty Bennett is our CEO and runs the company. And I've worked for Monty, for a long time. And almost like part family. I've worked there for so long. And, I went to him a handful of years ago and said, I don't really want to be, I don't want to be public accounting, public company accounting job anymore. I think I'm going to retire. And he goes, that's great, but you can't. So, so stay on. And so I really got interested doing a lot of civic work at that time.
What got you interested in this?
I've always I go to Highland Park United Methodist Church here in Dallas, and they do a lot of they work a lot closely with Austin Street Shelter and some of the other shelters, and so I went to some of these events church related, and I just got really interested. I've always kind of had a heart for the unsheltered and the homeless, and more importantly, I've had a heart for our city, and I saw what was going on downtown. And, here's downtown Dallas. It used to be totally vibrant. And
what years was this starting to notice this? And
I would say in the last 10 years, for sure. Okay. I mean, downtown really.
But when you arrived, if you got here in the late 80s,
you
missed the good part of downtown.
Yeah, right.
You never saw the Texas OU where it happened downtown.
That's right.
And you arrived right when we went to the single member district. You arrived just in time for for all the falling action.
Yeah, that's right.
And that you've seen. And
I started, Monty was really focused and I was focused and what was happening downtown. And we just felt like, I became a board member of the Dallas Regional Chamber and the Citizens Council. Became really good friends with the folks at DDI, and I already knew a Daniel Roby at Austin Street Shelter. So I just started getting enmeshed into the overall space.
We need to have Daniel on.
Yeah.
That'd be a good one.
Yeah. And just really what was happening downtown. I mean, you know, you've got, you know, you had downtown Dallas that was probably a third vacant, and you had companies like, you know, AT&T thinking about moving, and you had companies like Bank of America and the tallest tower that wanted to relocate to Clyde Warren Park because of crime and homelessness issues. And, you know, it's just like one thing leading to another. I mean, it's like, where, you know, you had the whole, all the issues with, you know, Neiman Marcus, their flagship store potentially leaving. And, so we started really looking and felt like that we should be more vocal. We felt like that the cause of the direction of downtown was related to primarily to two issues, and that's crime and homelessness. And if we could fix the crime problem and we could fix the unsheltered homeless issue downtown, then there would be, you know, less reason for companies to leave. But we felt like the crime and homelessness were the primary issues. Now, when we first started talking about this 2.5 years ago, you know, other people disagreed and thought that we had lost our mind, that, you know, downtown didn't have crime problem. And
was that all the blind people that you
were? Yeah, okay. That's right. Yeah. It didn't have an unsheltered problem. So, you know, as part of a...
Do you think that's a typical thing in big cities where it's obviously a glaring problem, but nobody wants to acknowledge it?
Well, I mean, that was clearly the case for a while, but I think people, you know, people really woke up and understood. I mean, we were kind of the force behind the Prop STU, and STU were Prop U on the ballot. There were a lot of we had the enough signatures that it made the ballot, and it was passed overwhelmingly.
Which one was this?
Prop U.
What was Prop U?
Prop U.
I was about to say, I'm too dumb for all these acronyms.
So this changes the charter.
It was passed by the voters to the city would have to hire 1,000 more police officers.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
And that we would have to pay them market. If you look at Dallas and all the suburbs and looked at the pay, we were at the very bottom. And so...
Dallas is probably the toughest job.
Oh, it's by far the toughest job. So we would a lot of these people would go through the Dallas Academy and get trained in Dallas, and day after they get, you know, hired, they would go get recruited by Frisco and Plano and get their salaries. So part of Prop U was that we would have to be in, our pay scale would have to be at a certain level, so we wouldn't continue to lose these officers that we've trained in the academy.
Yeah.
To the burbs. It just makes sense.
We're going to still be unwinding.
That's right.
How bad the Broadnax administration was.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's going to be a 20-year cleanup because we didn't acknowledge we have a homeless problem, we have a crime problem, and a huge citizen dissatisfaction problem.
Absolutely.
That everything is fine. Oh, we're doing good. Of course, the city was being propped up by all that COVID money.
Yeah.
This year's budget thing.
That's right.
Started back when the city, you know, they made lots of decisions that they didn't need to make. Like,
do you think that goes with the roads too?
Sure. We have terrible streets.
There was a couple from Chicago that was here 2 weeks ago, and I just was sitting next to them at a restaurant, and I heard the woman talking about this wedding they'd come to, and she was like, you know, it was out at this facility near White Rock Lake. It was such a cool building and all this cool, like, it was such and the houses around White Rock are so beautiful, and the trees and all this, but I'll be damned if the roads are not the worst roads I've ever seen in the country.
They really are.
From Chicago.
Our traffic signals are 20 years behind. I mean, we've not made infrastructure commitments.
It is awful.
The city hall thing, and I don't want to get into that. We've talked about it before when Tip was on, but it's just an example of we don't make decisions on taking care of the stuff we have. I mean, and the downtown thing, Deep Ellum and Wolanski's working on a column I know right now, but look at all the restaurants that are closed in Deep Ellum in the last 6 months, and two or three of them have been brave enough to say, we did it because of crime.
Yeah.
I mean, and if you go back and you look at, like, you know, when Giuliani was mayor before he was crazy, but when he was mayor and he had that kind of broken window thought of, we're going to have no tolerance for this. We're going to make people behave. We had to have a change in mindset of, we're not going to let all these young people go down there and race cars. And,
and that was the last golden age of New York, really.
Yeah.
Bloomberg caught the problem, they knew it was a problem,
and they wanted to make it better.
Yeah,
we're not great in the city about making many things better. We're really good at complaining.
Yeah,
like, oh, we can't have this project that's too tall. Yet we also need more tax base to pay for police officers to make us safe.
Right.
So I mean, there are a lot of problems. And this budget thing. This is not a one-year thing. It's going to be ongoing, where you're going to have to decide, are we going to cut services, are people going to have to lower the bar? Mm-hmm. People don't really want to do that. I think most people expect Dallas...
We've, over quadrupled our tax base in the last 30
Dallas
years.
Dallas hasn't.
Dallas is the only one that hasn't grown.
Are, like,
your appraised value.
Valuation.
But there was a day, like back in the olden times when my dad was on the council, in the 60s, 70s, into the 80s, you had the commercial property tax base in Dallas be, much higher than the residential. Now the burden is on the residents and not on commercial properties. And then you got the city deciding in West Dallas and down Southern Dallas, they're going to get rid of more industrial tax base.
Yeah.
You know, there's parts of the Stebbins corridor that are in the floodplain that the city didn't spend bond money to get it out. So Dallas has just made real decisions over a long period of time that our business core isn't as important. And then that's why everybody has high tax bills. And it's why people, if you look at, and I want to ask you about the proposed additional county tax on homelessness soon. But if you look at what people pay in Dallas for their services and compare it to, I can go live in Coppell or I can go live in McKinney or Cedar Hill or these other places. A lot of this is just families, I think, make business decisions.
Kitchen table decisions.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Mark, you're going to have to do more than homeless.
I mean, one of the reasons why I became so interested in it, because we were in the hotel business.
Yeah.
And we had the Embassy Suites in downtown Portland. Mm-hmm. We had hotels in downtown San Francisco. We had hotels in downtown Seattle. We've got hotels in Los Angeles. And just look at what's happening in those. I mean, those
there
areas.
Wasn't anything wrong with those areas, right?
Yeah.
They were all fine.
Maximum occupancy.
Those cities have gone to hell in a handbasket.
Yeah.
I mean, downtown Portland, you can't.
Seattle too. Crazy stuff going on down there. Yeah.
Places that I used to walk around in Los Angeles when I went to college at Pepperdine. I couldn't walk around in broad daylight now. I mean, it's impossible because of all the unsheltered and all the homeless. But also kind of going back, so I got really interested because of all those reasons. And we felt like we didn't have any data. So as a member of the regional chamber, I got one of my fellow board members, Doreen Griffith, who is managing partner of Grant Thornton. And she and I were talking, so let's put together a team and go out. At that time, it was every 2 weeks. Now it's once a month.
And this was to combat the people that were saying
there's not a problem. So let's physically put together a team to count the unsheltered downtown and send it out to across the city every month. And so we did that. And I wanted Grant Thornton to be involved because it kind of, I liked having their procedures and their accounting background and kind of gave credibility to our report. So this is a co-authored report.
These people can count.
That's right.
Right.
So we have specific procedures. So when we first started 2.5 years ago, I think there was 12 encampments downtown. And the first count we had, or around the first count, we counted over 400 unsheltered on the streets.
And what was downtown? What's our boundary?
It is basically, borders by Clyde Warren Park.
Yeah.
And 45 and 35. Yeah, it's kind of the central business district.
Yeah,
that's right.
Okay.
And so we counted over 400 unsheltered and a dozen encampments. And so this went out every month, at that time twice a month, but now every month, to now it goes out to over 100 people a month. I mean, everyone on city council, a lot of the folks in DPD, all of our business. So as a member of the regional chamber, I mean, business leaders are like, wow, this is amazing. We got to get our arms around this. Something's got to happen. So I love the idea by sending this report out and kind of holding people accountable. Those numbers in the CBD have been doing this down. We haven't had an encampment in downtown in well over a year. The last report that went out last month, we were struggling to find 20 people. So it's gone from 400 down to 300, down to 200, down to 100. There are times that I can go down, the team will go downtown to do their report, and we're like, there's no homeless. There's no unsheltered people in the entire central business district.
Can walk you just south of 30, and I'm trying to 20 people in 5 minutes.
That's right.
So they're still there. So they're just not downtown.
Yeah, that's right. So again, the goal was to count the people in the central business district.
Yeah.
I mean, clearly there are still issues in other parts of Dallas. But what's interesting is, you know, we're working with the folks at DDI, Jennifer Scripps and the folks at DDI, Sarah Kahn and the folks at Housing Forward. So there were several initiatives put in place during that time to make sure that the focus was on downtown. Part of it was because FIFA was coming and we wanted downtown to be clean as a whistle for FIFA. But the whole idea was, let's focus. Could we put processes and procedures in place to really fix a problem? And I think we've been able to show that we can. And all those people were not just moved elsewhere. A lot of those people, the vast majority of those people, received the services they needed, got the shelter they needed, got, you know, a lot of
them. So homelessness and crime are a problem. When your theory, what is the cause?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there were 400 homeless people in downtown Dallas.
Yeah.
Why were they there?
I think a lot of the homeless and a lot of the cities tend to congregate in a central business district type area.
That's where services were for Dallas.
That's where the bridge was located downtown, which was the first
terrible decision. The bridge should have been out on Stimmons at the old hospital.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was a decision made in, I don't know, maybe the 2010s.
Yeah.
And
Austin Street's right next door.
Well, it's, yeah.
And so you have a congregation of services that's all right near.
So the report kind of expanded itself about a year ago to not only include the unsheltered, but also to include crime. So we have teams that pull the data from the DPD, from the crime analytics dashboard, and we do summaries.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, because no one's going to go into the crime analytics dashboard and even understand how the numbers work. But we report by violent crime along with the categories, nonviolent crime along with the categories, and then crimes against society, which is another tier that they report. And we report this every month. And so not only do we report on the unsheltered, we also report crime.
Crimes that happen in that area.
In the central business district.
Right.
And what's interesting, we also compare it to downtown Fort Worth. And you think, oh, well, maybe we shouldn't. Well, I think Fort Worth just hit over 1 million people. Dallas is 1.3 million. Fort Worth's gone over 1 million. Yes, they're
Fort
downtown.
Fort Worth's growing much faster than we are.
Their downtown area is smaller than Dallas. I think we have to be fair. The central business district. But it's at least comparable.
Sure it is.
You would think. And there is still a significant difference in crime between downtown Dallas and downtown Fort Worth. And we have had the DPD.
Who has more?
Downtown Dallas, significantly. And there's been a significant reductions. And right now, year to date, the violent crime numbers in downtown Dallas are significant and reduced. They just opened up a police substation downtown the first part of the middle of the year. So DPD is focused on it. DDI is focused on it.
It doesn't include the Cedars.
That's right.
And Deep Ellum.
That's right.
And Fair Park.
That's right. David Davis on Downtown Dallas Inc. In charge of their security I mean, he's got an amazing team. So working together, if I'm doing my count, if my team is doing the count and they see an unsheltered person, we pull, there's an app called the CSA app that we started, and it's a DDI sponsored app that kind of started, and we tag them, take a photo, tag it, and within 3 minutes, the DDI team will be there to take them to shelter.
Wow.
I mean, today, if we drive down there.
Well, if they don't want to go to shelter.
And so that's another whole issue that we have to talk about, because clearly that's, you know, an issue. Because they can't stay in Dallas parks overnight. It's against the law. There will be some people that are restricted, don't want to go to shelter. And I think we're doing some things to change that. But that's kind of an ongoing process. But there are clearly a group of 10 to 15 people that have been downtown for a long time that are hesitant to get help. Mm-hmm. And most of them have addiction issues or mental health issues, and they need those services.
What do you think about the county commissioners, or a slim majority of them, putting on the ballot the decision to, you know, provide an additional tax on people?
Yeah, 3-2 it passed.
Yeah, so, 3-2.
I'm very much supportive of it. I mean, look, during COVID and all these cities received a lot of monies from HUD and otherwise to kind of fund services.
They spent on a wide variety of things.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. And those dollars don't really exist now. I mean, the dollars coming out of DC and out of HUD are kind of, and I agree with the direction of the administration on how those HUD dollars are being allocated now, but it's very different now than it used to be. But in order to continue the success we've had downtown and take those successes throughout the rest of the city,
mm-hmm. We need more funding.
We need operational funding.
Well, yeah. Do you think people will vote for it?
I think I don't know off the top of my head, but on an average price home in the city of Dallas, I think they said it's $5 a month increase in their property taxes. And I'm supportive. I mean, I saw the polling in Dallas County. It's overwhelmingly, people want the unsheltered issue all over the county to be resolved. And we can't do it without funding.
Well, if I would pay $5 a month, mm-hmm. if it was solved.
But yeah,
that's always the issue. It's like we pay taxes every month, and then we bitch about the roads. Yeah. And so, but if the roads were fixed,
I think this is my take on the whole unsheltered. I mean, probably for the first time that I can remember in the city of Dallas, I mean, we have alignment of City Hall. I mean, our council, our city manager, she is highly focused on this issue, and she wants this issue resolved all over the city. So our city manager, our council, our DPD, our civic organizations, you know, your regional chambers, your, you know, all over the city, all the civic organizations and the business community, you know, so I'm working closely with kind of the large business leaders all over the city, and people are willing to invest what it takes to get this solved. And that, in my mind, includes the additional county tax. It includes some other things.
Well, you still work for Ashford, technically, correct?
I do.
But you're almost volunteering this work that you're doing, correct?
So, yeah, I'm doing almost 100% of my time now in this initiative. The mayor nominated me. I'm chairman of the Citizens Homeless Commission in Dallas. So I kind of lead that organization. I'm working very closely with, primarily it's myself, Daniel Roby with Austin Street Shelter, and Frank, who works over in the Austin Street Shelter area, but Daniel Roby, Brenda, the CEO of the Stew Pot, and Sarah Kahn at Housing Forward. And we've actually We've had multiple teams several times go to DC to meet with HUD. I mean, Scott Turner is a Dallas guy, and I think we're trying to put our case out there to get some help and funding from HUD. We're working really closely with the governor and some of our state representatives to get some state funding. But what we have focused on is the area around where Austin Street Shelter is. And it is outside of the Central Business District, but it's bordered by I-30, I-45, and the DART rail line. But it's that triangle right outside the Central Business District. And I went a big group that go down to Austin at Google headquarters a couple of years ago. Senator Tan Parker sponsored it. And we had folks from Dallas, Houston, Austin, all the major cities. And Senator Parker goes, you know, guys, we don't want our Texas cities to become what's happened in California and Portland and Seattle. We can do better. We have a lot of smart people. Let's figure this out. And what we focused on was a tremendous success that they've had in San Antonio with the Haven for Hope. And about 15 years ago, San Antonio was having a really bad problem.
On the Riverwalk.
On the Riverwalk. Yeah. And as you know, a big chunk of their tax, their dollars is tourism dollars.
Sure.
And you know, the folks from Valero Energy and Frost Bank and HEB, the business leaders got together and said, we've got to fix this. We can't leave it to the city to fix it. We have to fix it. So they got this large 25-acre parcel close to downtown, but outside of the Central Business District. And they built, and it was almost all private money, they built the Haven for Hope. And Haven for Hope has had the most success.
What exactly is the Haven for Hope?
It's what I call a one-stop shop where in San Antonio, if there's an unsheltered person, they are taken to the Haven and they get triaged and we get all the help they need.
Isn't that somewhat what Salvation Army is doing on Stemmons?
It's very close. I mean, there are things that there's, you know, they have restrictions on what, on which people can go to the camp, but I mean, the work they're doing is fantastic. But the Haven for Hope is, it's kind of a one-stop shop. And that's where the triage occurs, the mental health services, the addiction services. And they also have 2,000 shelter beds to put people in to get help they need until they can ultimately be, you know, back in society with jobs. And that's the goal. There was just completed a 15-year study for the success for Haven for Hope. And it was published by the University of Texas. It was just released. I'm happy to send it around. And it proves the just tremendous success. For every dollar that they spend for Haven, that is spent at the Haven campus in San Antonio, it saves Bexar County and the city of San Antonio $40.
Well, because you talked one of the things that matters is the jobs.
Yeah. You got to get people back in society, active members of society.
Job.
So think about what I just said. For every dollar spent at Haven, save 40. So, I mean, we're talking about Dallas County. Think about the dollars Dallas County spends at Parkland, putting the unsheltered in and out of jail. Mm. I mean, it's insane.
Every time.
I mean, multiple times, all the time, because we don't have this kind of facility yet.
Well, we were just down in San Antonio February for the ICSC conference. I hadn't been down there in a few years, and I was blown away you felt like, I felt like, you know, my wife could have walked down the Riverwalk at midnight,
what we're doing.
You can go all the way to Pearl, the brewery.
Yeah.
I mean, it's very safe, I mean, and clean.
Mm-hmm.
Clean.
So we've got a new entity called Pathways Dallas, is what we call it. And we're, again, working very closely with the Stew Pot, working very closely with the Austin Street Shelter. So that whole area, that whole triangle we just talked about, is going to be part of the overall Pathways Dallas campus, which will be like the Haven for Hope campus. Phase one will begin construction here in next 60 days, and it'll be at Austin Street Shelter. So it'll be the first thing to be constructed will be a central intake center. So unsheltered off from all over the city. They will be taken to the central intake. They'll have systems that understand the availability of how, of the sheltering, of what shelters are available all over the city. But they'll be taken to this triaged. They'll be getting them, they're building 24 new mental health beds as part of that campus. This will be open in 14 months. But they'll be triaged and get those services right away. So it's pretty exciting. That's so
the triage is, because when you look at the whole unsheltered homeless population, there are probably categories. You have people that are seriously mentally challenged, drug addiction, both. And then some people that are hard times.
I mean, and there's a big chunk of people that are just, they're homeless because they've lost their job. Mm-hmm. They're homeless because, you know, they just can't afford to make the next payment because of...
Because life's expensive.
And so a lot of these people, you can get them... If you have a bridge, you can get them back into society and not continue to be homeless right away. If you hop on it right away, you can get those services. So that's a big chunk of the population.
It's cliche, but that's like low hanging fruit. There's people that they don't want to be homeless. Right. They want to work. Right. You got to get them fast as possible back into society.
Right. But the beauty is from this intake center, you can do that triage and make those decisions. But it is really critical that the folks at Housing Forward, which I'm a big advocate of, Sarah Kahn and her team do amazing work, and they work really closely with Austin Street to get these services out to these people to react quickly. So we've had tremendous success. There are things going on. There will be a larger campus. For instance, we're working, there's big parcels over there. There's a big parcel owned by DISD, and we're working with DISD to hopefully take control of that larger parcel so we can expand this Dallas Pathways campus to even have more facilities. So the campus will expand over time.
Is that bad for the Cedars or good?
No, I think it's good. Because one of the reasons why,
for 20 years, the Cedars is going to happen.
The Cedars are back.
Yeah, you know, Cedars are going to happen. It's really going to happen next cycle. It's always going to be the next cycle.
If you go to Haven, to go to San Antonio, do a tour at Haven for Hope.
Yeah.
It's not a homeless facility. You think you're walking through a well-managed, cured university campus. So it's a place for the unsheltered. Right now, we got to change what a homeless facility. So
this Haven for Hope, is it funded all by private dollars still, or is it
a combination?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Public-private type. That's right.
Well, we had a hard time when we did the zoning case for Salvation Army, getting people, including council members, to buy into why we need another facility.
Yeah.
And understanding the range of services at the private, the expense of them, these are hard solutions.
Yeah.
What do you think, and I like that you have statistics. What do you think the perception change is? Mm-hmm. Do you think that people that live in Frisco or Wiley or places think downtown is safer and the homeless problem has been abated to some extent, or do you? Because I don't think so.
I think the people that go downtown,
but that's a small number of people. Yeah. I think we got a problem now. There are a lot of people that have just taken it off of the list of don't go downtown, don't go to Deep Ellum.
Clearly there is some of that, but hopefully, over time. I think people saw during FIFA. I mean, look at all
FIFA
the
act- was huge.
Look at all the activity on Clyde Warren Park.
Oh, and the museums. Just, yeah,
it's spectacular. I mean, downtown Dallas can offer things that you can't get in Frisco and Plano. Yeah. And it's
definitely good. I took my son a few months ago, not even two, 3 months ago. He wanted to go to see this band that was playing in Deep Ellum. Look at this. And I'm like, he's 17. And I went with him. Mm-hmm. I sat through the show. It actually ended up not being so bad. But It was great.
Yeah.
Deep Ellum was fine. I mean, and there was a bunch of kids his age mm-hmm. that were down there going to a concert. And there was, mm-hmm. it was, I was so surprised at how
we're at a tipping point where mm-hmm. I'm worried Deep Ellum is perception is important. Yeah. And it may end up being the West End. I mean, you remember when you first came to Dallas, the West End was a huge deal. Yeah. It was an entertainment district. It did really well. And now it doesn't. So,
my first feeling when he wanted to go to this concert in Deep Ellum was, I don't think I'm going to send you down there by yourself. But he could have.
Yeah. This is the problem of it takes a long time for people's perceptions to change because they don't go to downtown very often.
To change back.
Yeah.
Very quickly, your perception can go right down the tube of somewhere. But to come out of it and be like, okay, Deep Ellum safe again now, that takes longer than it took for you to go.
I just think City Hall.
You know.
I think City Hall, I think the city manager, I think they are focused on downtown. They're kind of reimagining downtown and what it could be.
I think everybody we're talking to is
not just Clyde Warren. I don't know if you've been down there and just, I mean, I'll go down there and there's so many new parks downtown, beautiful parks, but beyond Clyde Warren Park. And they are clean as a whistle. They look great. You feel safe. Mm. And
we need more people living downtown.
Yeah. We have 16,000.
Yeah, it's becoming a neighbor. I guess it already is.
Yeah.
I worry a little bit if you look at, with this new election, let's say it passes, if you compare it to Collin County, they don't have a Parkland tax.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, many of their school districts don't tax at the same rate. Dallas has a pretty reasonable tax under a dollar.
Yeah.
So, but if you start taxing, like the community college, Parkland, you start adding these things up and comparing, I don't know how many people do. I mean, I do, but. It does. And what you said is this is an expensive place to live.
My take is people don't mind paying the incremental tax as long as the solution is solved. And I think by holding people accountable, looking for expecting results, immediate results, continued results.
Yeah.
I think as long as people, can see and feel that things are improving and getting better. And there used to be.
But we need him to, because I guess it was Laura Miller appointed Mike Rawlings homeless czar.
Yeah.
That was the first time people knew who kind of Mike was. Mm-hmm. And, we're going to fix it. Mm-hmm. Well, and he worked hard on it. I know he remains a real advocate. Mm-hmm. But we've had this sort of like, we're good at it, we're not. Yeah. And our vigilance sort of ebbs and flows.
Yeah.
I agree with you. I think people also, are really deathly worried about. We've seen that with guests about how downtown is it going to survive?
I think
it's going to have to be changed. I mean, if you the old school thought of downtown being a business center, that's already moved.
Yeah.
It's moved to uptown. That's great, but we got to figure out what downtown is going. Old downtown is going to be.
Well, if you get, I think you're right. If it becomes more of a residential center, and that could then turn into more businesses coming in there and office coming in there once the residential base is back in there.
Yeah.
And Fair Park.
And I think you're right.
Absolutely would,
And you have to be right to start with the homelessness and crime. If you don't get those two things under control, none of the other stuff can happen either. But
that's right.
Downtown to me still, the picture that comes in my hand is Christmas Vacation with Chevy Chase's son when when they're putting the Christmas lights on the house.
Yeah.
And he grabs the lights and they're in that huge ball.
Oh, it's a mess.
And he's like, here, I see you work on that. You know? And that's like, so we got to get the homeless untangled but there's other stuff, that has to happen. But you can only, you got to tackle each of them.
But I think we are at a place where we've got City Hall, we've got the civic organizations, we have the business community, all of which want results.
Like the denial's gone.
That's right. The denial is gone. Everyone wants it fixed. And we've got collaboration across the board.
But do you think there's collaboration between City Hall and the business community?
I do on this issue. I absolutely do.
Because
I absolutely do.
I mean, make a case that
I absolutely
it took losing the Mavericks and the Stars to wake people up.
So do you think do you think that's a change now with City Hall? Like, because they lost Mavericks and the Stars, do you think they're finally they've shaken them?
I think
they're gone.
I mean, it looks like they are now, but maybe they're
if
not.
If you're a real estate guy, you know they're gone.
Well, yeah, sometimes you have to hit the brick wall to realize, you know, where you
yes,
are.
I think I think you had to have such severe loss.
Yeah.
That it galvanized people to all get on the same team and not play single member district politics and the things that continue to hold Dallas back.
Yeah.
Because the other cities they compete against don't do those things.
I think this is kind of the human condition. You have to
like an act.
We can do a whole show on that. I think that's a good talk. I thought I wrote a good column.
It changes everything if we can get an at-large seat.
We need several. We need like 8-8-3-1 or some similar, where we have some people looking out for the whole city.
Yeah.
Because
we
all use the whole city.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like the roads, man, my suspension is just screaming at me.
My son knew when he is in the city of Dallas as opposed to other places, he told me when he's learning to drive because of the roads. This is not good when a 15-year-old at the time.
They're terrible now.
And, you know, and that's another thing people are mad about. I mean, the last citizen survey, the city did improve. I mean, the citizens' responses are better, but there's still a lot of people that are saying, I'm not getting my money's worth. And I don't think they did.
I think that's the key. You have to get, if you feel like you're getting your money's worth. Yeah.
You made a really great point. If people, if you hold them accountable and they're doing it, people feel like, yes, the money I'm spending that
makes sense, is
working.
Yeah.
You know, but all too often, you know, I mean, you know, look, Dallas has a 68 cents compared to HP at 19 or Irving at 50 something. It's a very high tax rate where arguably they deliver the worst services. They got to get
better accountants.
If you're gonna be expensive, you better be good.
Guys, we're out of time. That was awesome. We could go forever.
Happy to talk about it. We could talk about it forever.
We're going to do it on location out at the Nunley Ranch.
There you go.
Okay. We'll set it up there. Yeah.
There you go.
I like that.
Thank you for being on.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks.
Yeah, great to meet you.
Yeah.
Appreciate it. All right. This has been the Working Title Show with Zach Sams. We are done. We'll see you next time. Thanks.